Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast. My name is Taylor and today I'm joined by a runner who's been running consistently over the last 2.5 years and in that time has completed 2 marathons and 5 half marathons. We got to talk about her experience training for her first marathon, balancing being a mother throughout the whole training experience, running the Eugene Marathon, battling sickness throughout, and how training evolved as she ran her second marathon. I learned a lot from this one. I hope you do too. Please welcome, without further ado, Noelle. Noelle, thank you so much for coming on today. Really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to talk to me. How are you doing today?
Great, Taylor. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. So I figured we would just start from the beginning. I know you've been running for the last 2.5 years, but I'm curious, where did your running journey originally start?
Originally, I started running back in high school, way back when. I ran cross country and distance track, and then that carried into college, ran for a couple years. Then I just took a long break. I didn't run until 2014 was my first race. It was a half marathon, San Francisco Women's Nike Half Marathon. Ran it with some friends, totally didn't train. It was a really brutal course. San Francisco Hills are not easy by any means. So yeah. I took another break again from running, just kind of sporadically whenever I wanted to feel in shape or whatnot. But I didn't get more consistent with running until pandemic. Postpartum, that's when it really started to kick off again. But even then, it was a very slow journey. It wasn't something that happened overnight. It was just literally baby steps along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So you kind of had two different relationships with running, it sounds like. You had your kind of college and when you were first getting started, and then you had your postpartum, post-pandemic, where you were starting to get back into it. So how did your relationship with running really adapt, I guess, between the two?
That's a really good question. So it did change. I feel like when I was younger in high school and college, running was more of something to do, that social aspect. I wasn't fast enough to be, you know, state champion, but I still had a good amount of oomph in my step, if you will. And then it felt sometimes more like a chore too. Back then, I didn't really take it seriously. And like with my lack of training during the first half marathon kind of proves that I just wasn't really into it then. I think the click switched postpartum when I started to finally get excited about this is something that's my me time. It's not a chore anymore. It's something I actually want to do. And I started to take it more seriously. And then once I started racing, after my race, I would give my son my medals and seeing him light up. That was just a whole other experience too. So for my first half marathon, to my second half marathon, where I actually have somebody who's rooting for me at the finish line, it just it took it to a whole new ballpark in the sense where I felt like I was running for someone other than myself, and it wasn't a chore anymore.
Yeah, you found your why. It's something that yeah. I talked about with a couple people that you don't just wake up one day and decide I'm gonna go run. Especially in the beginning, it doesn't feel great, so it's a weird a weird goal to just wake up and decide you want to do it. But when you have a reason why you want to do it, then everything kind of clicks into place. So that totally makes sense.
Yeah. The why is a huge game changer. I feel like later on in life and just any part of life, it can just start any day, but the why is really nice to focus on. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So signing up for your I guess second half marathon, what was the motivation to do that? Were you just looking for a new goal to hit, or how did that kind of come up?
I saw it as a opportunity, as a comeback, if you will. I knew at that point with where I was in my running, because I'd already done a couple 5K little races locally, that I wanted to see what I had in me. And I thought, if I didn't take it seriously then, and I'm starting to take it seriously now, let's see what I can do. And I just followed online plans for a half K training. And I think my PR was 18 minutes. And mind you, that's almost within a decade. So that is a long time. But still, just seeing that huge PR and seeing what I could accomplish with focus and training and taking it seriously, that just got me hooked. I was like, okay, this is starting a fire. I want to see what else we can do. So I think that was a huge point for me where everything just clicked and turned. And then this competitive bug took over.
And the race environments are good for that too. You get a little bit of confidence, because of course you can go out and PR your training runs, but it really means something when you do it. And you get a medal at the end, and it, like you can track it and you can post about it. So that's really great. So when did you decide, or I guess what came next after that? So you signed up for your second half marathon, you completed it. Did you jump straight to the marathon distance from there, or what was there anything in between?
So that was October 2022. And I had a couple more 5Ks. I think there was one in December I knew I wanted to do locally. And in that December, I just started thinking outside the box, can I do a bigger distance, which is obviously the full marathon. And I'm friends with a Boston unicorn in my neighborhood, Laura. She's just amazing. She's a great motivator for me. Talking to her about it, and she said, pretty sure you can do it. And I just needed that little bit of confidence from a Boston unicorn to just give me that oomph of, okay, let's see what we can do. So that December, towards the end of December, I signed up for Eugene Marathon, and I knew my training plan would be about 17 weeks, 18 weeks, give or take. And I just approached it as, let's just see what we can do. Let's just have a couple goals, ABC goals, and try our best. But that's kind of how it started.
Okay. All right, cool. So you had a training plan. Was it something that you had kind of put together yourself, your friend helped you with? How did you come about the training plan you stuck
with? I actually just downloaded from, I think, Runner's World, one of their marathon training plans. Mm. I can't remember if it was a 16 one or a 20 week one. And either way, I just kind of took where I was at during that time with my current training and adjusted it. I was at that time only running 4 days a week. And from that to my second marathon was night and day when I increased one more day. So 5 day training versus 4 day training, but that was just something that I tweaked and created myself, but it just helped me keep accountability in the schedule for training.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems you mentioned being postpartum in 2020. So you've got, you know, a child in your life now that you're going through this whole thing the second time around. So what was that like taking that into account when you're planning your training block out?
Oh man. Oh gosh. Well, you know, mother runners, I give all mother runners, all parent runners kudos, because you're not only trying to figure out your time, your schedule, but this tiny little person or multiple little tiny people's schedules too. So you're trying your best at the end of the day. Everyone's trying their best.
Yeah.
So for me, trying to figure out when to run was obviously crucial. And I'm a 90%. Well, it's less now, but during that time, I was a 90% treadmill runner, and I would run during naps. That was what helped me train. It was all treadmill nap runs. Like, that's just, I wouldn't have been able to do it without a treadmill, and during nap time, obviously.
Yeah. So a lot of it was finding, doing it when you could do it. It sounds like when you had the time, you putting in the time. But I'm sure that was a lot to balance during that time. So what, if any point during your training, did you feel like you were overwhelmed? Like, how did you adjust to that? What was going through your head?
There were, anytime he was sick, it felt like that was a step back. Anytime I had to adjust a run or scratch a run because of X, Y, and Z, that felt like I was taking a step back. And it just always felt like no matter how perfect a plan could be or schedule could be, some hiccup is going to happen in life.
Sure.
With kids. But just kind of focusing on the bigger picture, if I have, let's just say 200 runs and I miss about 10, it's really going to be okay. And I would just try to really focus on that and tell myself that over and over. And again, just every parent, just doing the best you can with little people, little ones to take care of, and focusing on the bigger picture was probably the saving grace for me through all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I feel like a lot of runners, especially newer or newish runners, it's a very much an all or nothing sort of attitude. You feel like if you miss a run or you miss a week of training because you're sick, or like you said, because your kids have stuff going on, that you're going to be completely off. But I think the reality is training is 17 to 20 weeks, depending on what you're planning on dedicating. And during that time, one run, 1 week is pretty minuscule, or at least it's less of a deal than we really think, or it's going to impact training less than we think.
Yeah. And I can't speak for every sport, but I think that's what it's like for a lot of sports, where you think, if I don't hit this mark today, there goes the day. And then that just gets you in that negative mindset of failure. You feel like in that moment, you're a failure, and you're not, but there's that rational thought versus irrational thought. So I totally, a lot of the times when I'd have those irrational thoughts of this is just a bump in the road, this isn't working, I would sometimes allow myself to feel those lows and realize at the end of the day, like, okay, just brush it off. Tomorrow's a new day. And trying to be optimistic was a huge flip for me too with my normal personality. I used to be a super pessimistic person. Yeah. But running has helped me be more optimistic and see the light is at the end of the tunnel and glass half full. But yeah, I think everyone goes through that where you just, if something is missed, you're just automatically like, I failed. But it's just going back to that perspective of it's okay if I failed today, tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And it's important. And it's good that you had the sort of foresight, I guess, to feel that way for your first marathon, even. I know you had been running for some time since then, but that's really impressive that that was your mindset immediately in the training process. I feel like a lot of people will quit early on or they at least have a lot more doubt in themselves early on because it is that all or nothing attitude. But it's good that you were able to kind of find your way into, no, that this, I'm still training for this thing. I'm going to do it no matter what. This day is not going to set me back. It's good that you were thinking that way. So cool. So moving through training, where would you say you were feeling the best through training, and what part of training did you feel like you were maybe feeling the worst?
The best. Oh gosh. I think the best I was feeling during my training was my long runs. I was hitting my marks, I was hitting my goals. And the worst was probably strength training. I'm terrible at keeping up with strength training. I really need to get better about keeping myself accountable.
You're not the first to say that. Yeah. I think we can all relate to that.
It is just so hard. And I think I get so bored with strength training. I'm like, I could have already ran 3 miles during this session. That's the hard part. But yeah, definitely the highs were the long runs and the lows were the lack of strength training, but live and learn.
So for the long runs, are you a headphone in listener? Are you somebody that is kind of listening to your surroundings? Are you in group runs? Where were you typically doing your long runs?
The debate of running with music or running without music. All right, let's go.
Yeah.
I listen to music. I have the Shox open earphones for all my runs. Mm. For group runs, I'll have those in, but I'll have the music really low so I can have conversations with other runners. But I have to run with music. I give kudos to the runners who don't, but I need music. I need it for the energy. I need it for that focus. One time I was reading an article in Runner's World magazine, actually. There was a marathoner who listened to one song on repeat the whole time.
Wow.
And I thought, I wonder if I can do that. And I got 5 miles. I mean, I wasn't going to go and try to do that for a marathon, but I did that for 5 miles. And I can't imagine doing that for a full marathon.
No, that sounds crazy.
But second of all, it made me realize that I think runners like myself who need music, who depend on music, I'm using myself for an example, you get to that point where you just kind of zone out and you just focus on the beat, focus on your breathing, focus on your form and everything. And that's kind of what just helps me. And that's why I need music. If I have a faster run or a race, I play punk pop music, really upbeat tempos. For my long runs where I need to slow down and just chill and just zone out, I play slow country music. I'm one of those people. I need music. And I think there's some benefits to it, but to each their own. It's a whole debate with some runners.
Totally. I'm on your side though. I need something to listen to something. Sometimes it's a podcast maybe, but I at least need something in my headphones to keep me going. It's long runs are a long period of time to be out there by yourself to not have anything to listen to.
But I haven't tried podcasts. People I can. Yeah, I haven't tried podcasts, but my running friends who do the audiobooks or the horror audiobooks, they're thrillers.
Yeah, yeah.
The suspenseful ones, I'm like, how are you not looking around your shoulder the whole time? Worried someone's going to come out of it.
Right.
So, but yeah, I get it.
That sounds like a group run only activity. I'd make sure people are around me, like making sure I'm okay. But yeah, I like podcast audiobooks. It's maybe something to try. I like it a lot because for the long run specifically, because sometimes when I have the right music on, I come out way too fast and then I'm gassed by like miles 8, you know, way too early on in the run. So sometimes podcasts will help me slow down and do all that. But yeah. So for the long runs, were you mostly running those on your own? Were you running those with a group? Was it kind of a mix?
I'm a solo runner. I've just barely started becoming a group runner, but that was this year. But yeah, so all of last year, I was just mostly a solo runner. A couple times I would do group runs in the summer at a trail run, and that was really fun. But so I just want to say 99% I'm a solo runner.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, cool. So I know something that comes up quite often with solo runners or runners that run their longer runs by themselves is that it's a lot of time to think. So what kind of, was it a processing tool for you? What kind of goes through your head on a long run? Are you just completely absorbed in yourself? Like, what's the mindset usually like for you?
It's honestly, it's an escape to get away from parenting. I hate to say that as if parenting's awful. It's not. But when you're with a tiny little person for so many hours in a day, you need your me time. My long runs are just times for me to put the gears on autopilot and just veg out with my music. A lot of the music I play in my car, for example, is kid music. So it's nice to be able to listen to the cussing music. The music where if I heard a song on the radio and I thought, oh, I want to hear that song, but I can't, you know, that's my time to really just focus on the music. Sometimes I will think about just things I need to do or things going on, but I try really hard not to think about stressful things when I'm running, because that's when I notice my heart rate goes up. I know that's hard to understand, but I really do try when I'm running to focus on my form, my breathing, and the music. I try to just let everything else go. I tell myself after this run, we can go wherever we need to go in our mind with to-do lists, planning, scheduling, whatnot. But right now during this run, we're going to focus again on our form, our breathing, and the music. And that's just what helps me.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. You're super present in what you're doing. And that's, I'm sure, helpful in a lot of areas of your life. That's really great. Yeah. cool. So for training, for I guess maybe the back half of your training, you're getting closer to the marathon. You're ramping up your miles quite a bit. What is going through your head? Are you feeling pretty prepared for your marathon? Are you feeling a little bit of doubt the sooner it gets? Like what was going through your head the closer you got to the big day?
I felt pretty confident that I was able to do it, because when I was getting closer and I was able to do my first 20 mile run, even before that, my first 18 mile, my first 16 mile, just those milestones were so huge to me, because I never thought, if you would have asked me a decade ago if I was going to train for a marathon, I would have laughed. But just getting to those milestones of each week increasing, those were huge. And my goal during my long runs, I think when I finally got to the half marathon point and up, I realized and I told myself, we're not going to walk during our long runs. And it's no offense to runners who do the walk run method. I started out with that method when I first got into running, but that was, you know, to get to 1 mile, to get to 2 to 3 and so on. But I knew for my longer distance over a half marathon, I needed to not walk during those times, because if I was going to walk during a training session, I didn't want to walk during the race. That was just something that was big for me. I wanted to finish under 5 hours, and I wanted to do it without walking. So all of those long runs, and then when I got to the 20 mile run and I realized I just ran 20 miles like straight, just feels like, I don't even know how to describe it, just the best freaking feeling in the world, this huge high.
Yeah.
You have to just go through it to feel it. I can't even emphasize what it exactly feels like. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's super impressive that you were doing it without walking too. I feel like even people that don't do sort of a walk run strategy, at least are taking a quick break to take in fuel or anything like that. So it's really impressive that you were able to go straight through the whole thing.
It's hard. And I had to cuss at myself a lot of the times. I remember it was either my 16th mile run or 18th mile run. The last two were hard and I was cussing myself out, but I just also knew like, this is what we need to do to be able to get to that finish line of the marathon. We have to just keep going. And you just keep telling yourself over and over how bad you want it, how you're going to get there, focusing on that. And I think you can probably do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And visualizing, I mean, I'm kind of maybe just speaking for myself, but visualizing race day too, thinking about it's going to feel like this on race day times 1,000, because you're going to have emotions, totally. You're gonna have people around you. So just making sure that you're keeping the finish line in sight. Cool. So was 20 miles the longest run that you did leading up to your marathon, or did you do anything beyond the 20 miler?
No, that was it. 20 miles. I knew because of where my pace was. And just from what I read, I shouldn't have gone over 20 miles with my time at that time. So I kind of stuck to the book with that distance. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. So once you ran your 20-mile run and you're in your taper period, how long did you do a taper period for? Was it 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
I think the taper was, I think it was 3 weeks, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, I'm pretty sure because I was following a plan again. I did a three-week taper and it felt like the longest taper of my life. I was definitely getting stir crazy. I was getting anxious and just focusing on, okay, when am I going to race? It's almost here. Okay. 7 more days, 5 more days. It was a really long taper. I wouldn't do a 3 week taper again.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of time to think, and it's something that's been kind of consuming your life for the last few months. Now all of a sudden it kind of comes to a halt and you have to deal with everything else again. But what were you doing during that time to keep yourself focused for the 3 week taper?
I was organizing. I was spring cleaning. I was getting rid of a ton of stuff at my house, detailing the house, if you will. So it was, I had a lot of time to just focus on that. And I was, relaxing and reading. I actually read a couple books during that time too, which was nice because I hadn't had time before with the training. So I just tried to just not run the best that I could.
Yeah. Did you pick up anything else fitness wise? Like, did you get back into strength training during that period? Were you just doing kind of the shorter runs?
No, I mean, I would do my shorter runs. I still stuck to a taper schedule. So I'd have a couple runs, but they weren't as intense. I didn't do any speed training. I didn't do strength training. I just started to dial back the mileage to prepare and get ready. So I would have fresh legs for Eugene. Yeah.
Cool. And what were the goals that you were going into the marathon with? I feel like everybody's either got a pace goal, or you said you wanted to do under 5 hours. But what were really your goals for your first marathon?
So for Eugene, my goals were finish under 5 hours and run it without walking. Those were just my very two strict goals for myself. And sometimes if I put a goal out there, I'm very OCD about reaching that goal, almost to a stubborn fault. I would rather break a bone than not accomplish those goals for that race. I was just that determined to finish under 5 hours and not walk. Obviously, knock on wood, it didn't come to breaking of bones. I think I would have obviously collapsed.
Yeah.
But that's just to emphasize, like, at that point, how determined I was, how much tenacity I was going for it. Like, this is something I really want. This is something we've been training for 17 weeks or so. This is what I'm going to have happen. I just kept reiterating that like a crazy person, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, cool. So leading up to the race day, a lot of people, that week before is where you start to think about, am I going to change up nutrition so that I can prepare for this thing? What are my shakeout runs going to look like? Planning out that last week is pretty important for a lot of people. So what did you do, if anything, that week leading up to prepare yourself for the day?
I carb loaded. I ate so many carbs that week. I knew that I would need a full tank of gas come Sunday morning. I did sign up for the Eugene 5K the day before, and I was going to use that as my shakeout run. That was a really cool race. And I just took it really easy, nice and chill. That week, I didn't change up my diet, and I did even at staying at Airbnb in Eugene that weekend, I took my own pasta and meat sauce and everything that I normally would in the past, because I'm a firm believer the day before a long run or a race, nothing new. And my go-to was always pasta. Yeah. Just don't change it up. Just stick with pasta and meat sauce, garlic bread, all the carbs. So that's what I did.
Yep. Yep, I can relate to that. I brought my own coffee to the Airbnb. See, I was like, I'm not even going to mess with somebody else's coffee. I'm just going to do my own thing. Totally get it. So, okay, cool. So you were able to carb load the week leading up. So the night before, what is going through your head? Were you crazy nervous? Did you kind of feel this sense of calm? What was going through your head the day before?
Well, that weekend, that was an unfortunate weekend. My family started to get sick with stomach flu. So the night before, I was tending to sick family members, and then I think right before bed, I had a little stomach ache, and I thought, maybe it's just nerves.
Oh,
maybe
no.
This is just, I'm just nervous. I just chalked it up as nervous. So that was an interesting way to go into my first race. And then that morning before Eugene, waking up at like 4 something, because the bus is early and the race time was at 7. Yeah, I wasn't feeling great that morning either. And I thought, well, this is probably just, again, nerves. It's the day of. This has to be nerves. But it wasn't nerves. It ended up, I ended up catching the stomach flu too. And I wouldn't find out until later that night at urgent care. But so,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. The night before it didn't go according to plan at all. The whole weekend did not. And that's why I emphasize to new runners, you're always going to have a plan. You're always going to want things to go perfect, and nothing's going to be perfect or go to plan with your training, with your race. You just have to pivot and adjust and adapt and make the most of it. Literally, you just have to keep going forward.
Yeah. You could never guess. You can't write that. That's your whole family's going to get the stomach flu the day before your marathon. That's insane. And then you're going to get it yourself. That's just crazy.
Yeah. Saturday, I was crying a lot. It was a lot of stressful tears.
Yeah. I'm sure. For good reason, it sounds like. So were you feeling, and then we'll break down the whole marathon too, but were you feeling sick? Like you had the stomach flu that morning of the race and you just kind of talked yourself out of it, or?
So when I woke up that morning, I just knew something was off. I thought, okay, this is nerves again. And last night was nerves too. This is all too coincidental, but it's not, I don't have the bug. I ate my own food. I was fine. Around the start though, I was worried I would have to go to the bathroom. I didn't. But then at mile 15, that's when my stomach started to cramp really bad. And I was just thinking, I bet you I've got the stomach flu. Because in my previous long runs, I wouldn't get stomach cramps at mile 15.
Sure.
And this was not like a side stitch cramp. This was like, something's going on. So I think that was the moment where it hit me that I was like, okay, I've probably got it.
Yeah, that's crazy. So that's a whole other element going through your head that you're having to deal with on top of the marathon. Maybe I guess it could have been a little bit of a distraction if we're looking at the positive side, but man, that's just such unfortunate timing. So I guess before we get to, you said mile 16, that you were starting to not feel so great. Mm-hmm. What were the first 10 like? Like, were you feeling pretty good? Were you hitting your goals? You felt on track, or how were you feeling?
Pacing wise, I knew my first mile. Someone told me your first mile was going to be your slowest. And so I was fine with that. But when I did see my first mile time, that kind of was hard for me too in that moment. Ooh, that was a lot slower than my pace guide was. So that was hard. But the crowd the first 13 miles was great. Eugene is a really cool college town. It was just so many spectators. I actually get really nervous with people watching me run and race. So that was a little nerve-wracking. I don't like spectators yelling at me. But that energy was also really appreciated too, because there was a little tiny hill, nothing compared to, San Francisco hills, but a little hill nonetheless. Sure. And I'm not the best at hills. So having spectators up the entire hill was great. Fueling felt great. I was having a gel, I think, every 3 or 4 miles. I did run with my own bladder pack, so I would just take sips whenever I needed to. Yeah, the first 13 felt pretty good. I felt like I had found my groove around mile 3 or 4. I can't remember, but it was just slow and steady. I was just starting to chip away. And then everything changed.
Yeah, changed halfway through. Yeah. And before we get there, I'm really glad you said that about the hydration pack, actually, because that was something that I did that I got a ton of feedback on when I posted about it. Some people were like, why are you bringing your own? It's a big race. You're going to have aid stations along the way. And some people were like, thank you for posting this. I was nervous about bringing my own pack. I didn't want to look like a loser. So
yeah.
I feel like it's like this weird stigma around it. But for 26 miles, I don't know why you wouldn't want to have your own control over your own fuel and your own water intake. So
yeah.
I'm glad that you said that, because I think that's important for a lot of people to know. It's okay to bring your own pack if you need it.
Yeah. Did you use during your training, sorry to talk about you, but did you use it during your long runs to help you, or did you just use it for the race day?
I used it for my long runs too. Okay. And that was part of the reason why I wanted to use it on race day is because I had already been training with it. So it'd be throw myself off to not have something on my weight. But did you do the same thing? Did you train with your pack, or was that a race day thing?
No, I did. That's when I was doing all of my long runs, I would do my bladder pack, just because where I run out in the country, I'm first of all not going to take just a handheld for 16, 18, 20 miles. That's just not enough water. And secondly, I don't want to stop and go inside like a 7-Eleven or whatever to get water. So I just figured, let's just load up all the water, everything we need, all these pockets. Let's just, you know, giddy up, girl. But it made it a lot better once it was then race day, because I'd already trained with the bladder on and everything. Yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah, yeah, that's important for sure. Okay, so now mile 16, when things are starting to not feel so good, what is going through your head? Just kind of walk us through the experience from there.
I think the moment I realized you've probably got the stomach flu, this isn't nerves anymore. My first prayer and thought was, please don't poop yourself. Please don't have an accident.
Luckily,
I didn't, but I just started to lose energy really quickly. I started to lose, not necessarily my focus, but it felt like my thought process wasn't really there, because I was so focused on not having stomach issues that I wasn't really enjoying the race at that point. It then turned on the other side of the river, where there's less spectators. So that was hard, because there's not as much crowd support to get you through. I was starting to slow down. I wasn't wanting to eat any of my gels. I was barely sipping water. So it just got really, hard towards the end. At mile 25, even before that, when I saw from 20 to 25, I was pushing it and just like one more mile. And at mile 25, I almost cried, because I thought it was mile 26 and I was like almost there. And it's just like those people that say, you're almost there. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So that was hard. I really, really dug deep that last mile, but, it was hard. It was just really hard. I was deteriorating literally right along the course. Yeah. It was rough.
Yeah. 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 That's crazy. That's like I said, a whole nother element to the race that you did not need. So through that, I mean, I know you said you'd break a bone before you didn't finish a race. Did you have any doubt? Was there any DNF thoughts going through your head? Or were you like, even if I have to crawl across this finish line, I'm going to do this thing?
I never had a DNF moment. And if I had left the course to go to the bathroom, I probably would have had a DNF. Thankfully, it didn't get to that point yet. But I just kept telling myself, and cussing myself out for that matter, you are not going to stop. You're not going to stop. You're not going to walk. We can slow it down, but we're absolutely not going to walk. You're going to finish. And at that point, I wasn't so much focused on the 5-hour mark anymore, because I at that point didn't think I was going to accomplish that. But the walking part and then quitting part, I was just like, absolutely not. We didn't come all this way to quit now. So I really dug deep those last couple miles. It sucked. It was hard. It was unbelievably hard.
Yeah. So when you crossed the finish line, not feeling so great, were you able to enjoy it? Was it like a sense of just relief, or was it a celebratory feeling? What did it feel like?
Yeah, it was just all these emotions, all the emotions. I was a marathoner. I had never in my wildest dreams ever thought that I would say that sentence. I'm a marathoner. So that was cool. My family was there. Friends were there with signs. It was just an amazing top of the world feeling. That's one of the things I love about racing. It doesn't matter if you're first or last. The moment you cross that finish line and that self-accomplishment feeling overwhelms you, that's the best feeling for me. It really is. And I really hope other runners experience that and feel that too, because there's just no other better high, I think, of that runner's high, that feeling of, I did that. Nobody else did that for me. I did that. Yeah. I got myself through that impossible feat. And it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling. Like, you know what it feels like. It's just, I don't know. It's just amazing, man. I don't know.
Yeah. You can't put it into words, honestly. It's just something you have to experience. Cause it's like, it's not just that day that you're feeling. Of course, you just pushed through something insane, but you're also feeling all of the weeks of training that you put in, all the sacrifices you made, all the times you've had to say no to something. It's all just like crashing on top of you all at once. So it's a lot, but it's such a rewarding feeling. So after you crossed the finish line, obviously you probably took the night and probably the week after to recoup and get yourself back together. But I know you've ran a second marathon. So when did you start to think, all right, let me do this. Let me run it back. Let me do this thing again.
Oh boy. So that was in April. Yeah. And I knew I had a 4th of July 5K race that I kind of like to keep up with. I'm starting to do traditional runs now. 4th of July, Christmas ugly sweater. So I kind of just took some time to recover, got back into just base building and soft training. And I knew since I had such a higher mileage, I wouldn't need to train as hard for a 5K, but I did do some speed workouts. But it was right after my, I think it was right around either the week before, during or the week after my July 5K, I just had this crazy little thought, maybe I can run another marathon this year. Did a little searching on Google to see what's recommended. How many marathons can someone really run within a year? And I think that's so subjective because everybody is different. It could be two, it could be three. Some people can do a marathon a month. It just depends on the individual.
Yeah.
But I thought, yeah, I can do two marathons this year. Why not? So I had this crazy wild idea. I think I'm going to sign up for another marathon and I'm going to get a coach and I'm going to just try to just give it my all this time. And yeah, it was kind of crazy because I think my time frame went from 17 weeks down to 9 weeks from the time it was for my training. So it was obviously almost half.
Yeah.
It was extreme. It was short. But that was just the moment where I thought, I can do this. I'm that type of runner. If I have that crazy thought of I can do this, I just go with it now. I can't help it.
Yeah, it's over. Yeah. You've already talked yourself into it at that point. So that's interesting that you got a coach the second time around. So you kind of had both experiences. You got to go through it all on your own, and then you got to go through it with a coach. So what was it like the second time around going through with a coach? Night and day.
I didn't feel lost. I didn't feel as if I don't know what I'm doing like I did the first time around. And for me, it also helped keep accountability and making sure I had someone who was my biggest cheerleader, my biggest support, somebody who understood everything I was going through and then some, because she'd already done so many amazing marathons herself. So that was huge for me. I just needed that guidance of this is where I was at. This is where I want to go. How can I get there? And so that's why I think ultimately a coach was just amazing for me.
Yeah. And did your coach, I've heard, I haven't worked with a coach myself, so I'm just curious, but do they write out, I know they write out obviously your training blocks for you. Is it something they're helping with the nutrition side as well, the fuel side as well, helping you with different strategies in that sense?
For me, I chose a coach that focused on running only. I know there are coaches out there who do nutrition and running and training. My coach is great, Nicole Irish, runner girl. She helped me create my training plan. She helped me figure out what my paces should be. She helped me just really dial in with what would be best for me, where I was coming from and where I wanted to go. And obviously within realms of being realistic of where I could go. But the one thing she did help me with was my fuel intake during my long runs and my races. I was, for me and my body weight, my BMI, I had them too spread out. So by going from shrinking from taking 3 to 4 miles of gel to 25 minutes was a huge game changer. So that is one thing that she did help me with, but she's not necessarily a nutritionist, but the fuel I think helps with training nonetheless.
Yeah. Helped at least with strategy, and help you dial it in a little bit more. Cool. So the second time around, what do you feel like you learned compared to what you learned the first time around?
Second time around, I really learned the importance of increasing mileage appropriately. So I went from my second time around running 5 days a week versus 4 and increasing it kind of not necessarily the 10% rule each week, but just following the training plan and increasing it at a conservative pace. My coach was great about helping me slow down. The first training cycle for Eugene, I did all of my long runs at goal pace, which is not what you're supposed to do. Mm. So the second time around, she was having me slow down significantly. And I thought, well, wait a second. Why are we slowing down to get faster? That doesn't make sense. It does make sense. It totally works. So that was a really humbling and hard experience for me. putting that ego aside, that pride of you, just because you can run an X amount of miles at this pace doesn't mean you should all the time. So really slowing down was a huge thing for me, but I'm obviously it paid off. So I'm glad I listened to her and she knows what she's doing. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the second time around, obviously, you still have your family life that you're balancing as well. Did having a coach and being able to work with somebody on schedule and things like that, did that help? Or was that still something that was maybe overwhelming or you were having to fit in? Like, what was that like the second time
around? It helped. She's also a mother, so she gets it. She's got a busy schedule with her kids and work.
That's helpful.
So that was a huge connection for me that my coach is also a mother runner. And you know, a couple times if my kiddo was sick, I would just say, you know what, this run just didn't happen. I'm sorry. And it was just one of those pivot moments. Like, it's going to be okay. A scratched run is not the end of the world. We'll make up for it at the end of, you know, the journey. A couple of missed runs because of kids being sick or just kids coming up in general, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, so pretty similar, I guess. But this time around, you've got another resource, somebody that is also going through something similar to what you're going through with having to balance family and training for this thing. So I'm sure that was helpful to have somebody in your corner in that way.
Definitely helpful.
So you said that the second marathon, you had a much shorter training period. Obviously, you had a little bit more of a base to work with. So it was okay to shorten training a bit, I'm sure. But did it feel like it was any shorter the second time around, or did it still feel like, you know, a long training period to get to the second
first,
one?
First, I don't recommend training for a marathon in 9 weeks. I highly, highly use your discretion for that one, because again, I was just that crazy mindset of I can do this. I think the least amount of time should probably be 12 weeks. So just a little disclaimer at the bottom, but, made it feel much harder in that shorter amount of time was that extra running day, because I went from 4 to 5. And when I was increasing my mileage and she created the plan for me to run a 20, then an 18, then a 20, that was tough. That was super tough. And on that 18 schedule, I thought, well, what's 2 more miles? So I ended up doing 3 weekends back to back to back with 20 mile runs. That was hard. But I'm also glad that I pushed through that time to do that, because it helped. I feel exponentially come marathon day, and I wasn't as underprepared like I felt during Eugene. I feel like that definitely helped me a lot.
Cool. Yeah. So second marathon day rolls around. You said you're feeling a little bit more confident about it. What was different in the strategy on the second go around on race day than the first time?
I still kept up with my normal things, you know, pasta the night before, wake up early, little shakeout run the day before. But I think the biggest thing that helped me was I knew where I was running this time. With Eugene, it was just one giant big loop, and I'd never run in Eugene. You can look at a map, but if you don't really know where you're going, for me, that makes me more of a, I guess, a timid runner, especially during a race, because I don't want to get lost. If you're lost during a race, which has happened to me, that's time added to your time. And that's the worst thing for a runner.
Yeah.
So for Apple Tree Marathon that was in Vancouver, it was 2 13.1 mile loops. And to some people, that's probably not appealing. But for me, it was perfect, because I already knew that loop, because it was similar to a half marathon loop the previous year. I knew that area already. So it didn't feel unfamiliar. I was able to be comfortable. And I think that halfway mark of, okay, we just did one loop, let's just do one more big loop. For a lot of my long runs, I do a 4 mile loop. So that loop connection was just kind of autopilot for me. Like, one more loop, you can do this, one more loop. And that mentally just helped me.
That's interesting. Yeah. Cause I think a lot of people, well, I've heard both. Some people like a little bit more of a surprise, cause it keeps it interesting, keeps you focused, but that's interesting that you felt more comfortable knowing where you were going. Do you feel like it was because you knew where to push yourself and you could strategize a bit more, or what do you feel like contributed to that?
I think a little part of it might be just like slight OCD, just no surprises. Let's just stick to what we know. But definitely knowing a course from, okay, at mile 3, there's that little incline. At mile 8, we're going to have a lot of shade, but at mile, you know, 10, 11, 12, it's nothing but direct sunlight, no shade. I think that for me helps with races. It's just that familiar aspect of this is where I can focus on and dig deep in this spot during the course versus, okay, this is where I can kind of cruise for a little bit because it's not going to be as hot, just for an example.
Yeah, that's super smart. I like that a lot. So for the second time around, crossing the finish line, were you thinking, all right, let's do it. Let's do a third one. Or were you already thinking about a third one? Or what was it like the second time?
I was cussing myself out. It was starting to be sunny and hot. I was just, I was tired. Mile 25 was a real tough mile to get to that. And at the end, I remember saying like, I'm never doing that again. But now I've got my hopes on, you know, Marine Corps Marathon next year. So obviously it didn't stick.
Nice. Are you already signed up?
It's a lottery system. I'm pretty sure it's a lottery system. So yeah, I'm going to wait till this October, I think, to sign up. Well, to hopefully sign for next year. Yeah.
Yeah. We have short-term memory loss when it comes to marathons. Yeah. That's for sure. It always feels like you're not going to do another one. And then all of a sudden you've got two on the calendar.
Man, that bug just bites you. And you're like, all right, let's see what we can do.
It does. I don't know what it is. I mean, I feel like for me, it has something to do with just personal accomplishment.
Totally.
It's not the actual marathon. Mm-hmm. It's the training and leading up to it. It's the structure of having a goal like that to shoot for. It's just out of reach enough, I feel like, for most people that you do have to dedicate a good amount of time to train for it. Once you have a good base, you could maybe throw a half marathon every once in a while and be fine. But I think it's just something that you can really fixate on, for lack of a better way to put it. So where do you feel like, since you've ran two, where do you feel like your best miles typically are? And where do you feel like you struggle the most, if there was any consistency
for a marathon
there?
For full?
Yeah.
Well, it's just so night and day between first marathon and second. First one, it really feels like you have no idea what you're doing. Well, okay, I just felt like I had no idea what I was doing. And then the second time around, I thought, okay, we've been here before. Yeah. We know our way around the park, so to speak. But I think for me, after Apple Tree, my second marathon, I was most comfortable and felt more in control a good portion of the last half. So the first half, I was just, let's just stick with it. Let's just keep pace. And then once I hit that 13.1, I was realizing, okay, we got to start chipping away. That part is probably where I'm best at the second half of a race. That's when I can just focus. I dig deep, I guess. It sounds so cliche, but I don't know, this mindset comes over me of, all right, we were just fooling around before. Now let's hone in, let's focus, and let's just start chipping away. But that mile 25 was really rough though, because the heat always gets me.
And you're so close at the end too. You're like, oh, this is the longest mile of my life.
I love sunny days, but I hate sunny races.
Yeah. It's brutal for sure. It takes a lot out of you. Mm-hmm. Brings the heart rate up. It just, makes you a little bit more uncomfortable. Definitely. So I'm curious about a couple of things. I've been kind of closing these out with a few questions just for newer runners or people who are looking to get into the space that don't have any resources to go off of. I always do this disclaimer of, it's a personal journey. Go to a shoe store and get your feet measured. Like, go get shoes that fit you. But for you, what shoes are your go-to? I was like, if you have different training shoes to race shoes, what do you love?
I love Asics. I've been running in Asics since high school. But my rotation is the Keanu 29s or the Super Blast. I do have their trail shoes as well that I'll wear sometimes. And then I think I have an older pair of the 28s or 27s for Keanu, but those are Asics are what I wear. Super Blast are my favorite, hands down. Yeah. They are on the pricier side because I think they're about $200 a pop. But I can't emphasize, it's a great shoe. Mm. They're not plated. They're super thick, and the lightness, they're 8, I think they weigh like the 8 grams or whatever, but it's a really light shoe. It's been there for me for my marathons, for my training, my long runs. I'm on my third pair now, and I love that shoe. I can't emphasize that enough. It's a great shoe.
Yeah. That says something when you're on the third pair. That means that something about him's keeping you coming back. Cool. What would you say your go-to is for fuel? Are you a gel? Do you do gels? Do you do more natural?
I do salt stick tablets, chewable tablets as well. And I do water or noon endurance water. It just depends on what I'm doing for that run or that training session. I like GU Energy gels. It's just, I know some people, I feel like with gels and fuel, it's so subjective for everyone. Everyone's going to have different taste buds, and it's all trial and error too.
Totally.
You have to really go on long runs and try different brands to see what you like, what you don't like. And that's just what my stomach can handle. So one, that means it's a check mark. Two, I like the flavor of coffee. So that's another check mark. And they're easy to store. You just, even when you're done with the trash, you just shove it in your pocket and it's not a big deal for later. That's definitely my fuel.
Yeah.
Of choice.
Cool. That's good to know. Yeah. Like you said, it's so individual, but I think it's good to just know what your options are out there. I've had guests say anything from like dried fruit to goose, to bananas. So
I tried peanut butter once and that was not a good choice. I can't do gummy bear.
The texture would throw me off.
And it just felt like it was just stuck in my mouth. And then it just felt like it was stuck in my esophagus. Just too heavy for me.
Yeah.
But I know it works for some runners.
All the choice for sure.
Yeah.
And trial and error, like you said, definitely is important. All right, cool. Well, I know you kind of touched on it a little bit there that you've got a marathon that you're waiting for the lottery to sign up for, but what is coming up next you in the meantime, if anything?
So I just raced my first 10K about a week ago. I don't know if I'd race another 10K. It's a whole other beast. It's a challenging distance, even though it's only 6.2 miles. That's what I was wrapping my head around afterwards. Like, that was 6.2 miles, but it did not feel like 6.2 miles. I know I want to race a 5K in July, my normal 5K in July for Independence Day, ugly sweater run in December. But as of right now, I don't have anything signed up. I just, I want to sign up with the intent of I'm going to do this and put all my effort into it. So I don't know what that is right now. I'm very goal oriented. So if I want to race and if I want to try to PR, I'll do it. But I just don't have that drive right now. I'm sure it'll probably happen the next couple of weeks, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. And until you get a notification for a race that looks
but
interesting,
definitely
and then you'll be there.
This year. I just don't have that want, that drive to want to do a full this year. I'd rather wait until next year. Maybe I just don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I think that's good though, that you go into it with some intention, like you said, that you have a goal that you want to hit, or you have a reason to run it. It's not just something you're putting on the calendar to put on the calendar. And it's probably good to take a break from the full distance. You can really, you said, you got to have a why, or like we talked about in the beginning, a why to do it. So if you don't have a why to do it, then you're just going out there and running a stupid amount of miles for what, you know. But that's cool. So I guess my last question for you is just if you could go back and give some advice to somebody that's maybe starting off on their marathon journey, or they're thinking about signing up and maybe haven't signed up yet, what advice would you give that person?
Let's see. First marathon. Absolutely do it. Sign up. Life is too short. But remember that when it gets tough, you have to just push through that mental barrier of I can't do it. You have to push through, because no one's going to run it for you. You're only going to run it for yourself. And I promise you, if you push through that and you get to that finish line and you get that marathon medal, you're going to feel so much accomplishment and grit and strength and empowerment that you did something and you pushed through when you didn't want to. If you give up and quit, you're going to regret it. Simple as that. So that would be my advice to anyone signing up for a marathon. Do it.
Yeah.
Push through. Give it all that you have. It's going to be hell sometimes, but push through. Because if you don't, you're going to regret it.
No, I love that. I love that. And I know I said last question, but I kind of want to ask like a side question to that one, because you are a mother runner as well. So is there any advice that you would give to other mothers who are in the running space that are maybe thinking about signing up for a race like that?
Don't feel bad. Don't feel guilty. And I know that's easy. It's easier to say that than do, because I still feel guilty every time I'm out running long runs and I'm not spending time with my son. But you have to go after your own goals, because yes, you're a mother. Yes, you're a runner, but ultimately you are still you as a person, as an individual at the end of the day, and you need to take care of yourself. And if you're not going after your goals and your dreams, then what are we teaching our kids? That's what it comes down to for me. And think of it this way. If you want to run a marathon as a mother runner, go for it. Think about your why, like we talked about earlier. At the end of your race, give that medal to your one of your kids or whomever. But definitely stick with it. Give it to yourself to stick with it as a mother runner, because that'll make you a better mother runner for sure.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It was awesome hearing about your experience. And I feel like a lot of people are going to learn a lot from this one. So appreciate
this so much. This has been fun. Thank you again.